It is the Rosie on the House show, and we're in the garden with John J. Harper this hour, as we are every Saturday morning. With no room for any more callers, we've got a complete load. I was just getting ready to take us there. Let's see. I need to know where we're going. Which call?
Pick one.
You tell me. Let's go to Marie in Glendale. Marie, how are you, darling? How can we help you, dear? We had a little technical glitch there in mid-sentence, but we've solved it. It's cured, and we're ready for you.
Good morning, and thank you so much for doing this garden section.
Oh, you're welcome. We love doing it.
I have a pomegranate tree that was planted about 4 or 5 years ago, and it's doing very well. It's very healthy. But I don't think I understand. It's not like any fruit tree I ever owned before. The fruit gets big, and it looks like it ought to be ripe. It gets, the fruit is firm. But even in what I had read was that the fruit ripens in September. Even in September, the kernels are still not, they're white. They're getting sweet, but they're not red. Even into October, I still have kernels that are not fully red.
Okay, let's see what John Jay,
not fully sweetened.
Okay, let's see what John Jay might have to recommend for you.
Well, number one, there are varieties that don't turn red. There are some pomegranate varieties that have white seeds, and actually, a lot of people prefer them because they don't stain.
Your chin.
So, yeah, or your clothes, or, you know, I mean, pomegranate, you get it, you can't get it out. So that isn't all bad, necessarily. The other thing is, generally, it takes some cooler weather for those to finally really color up good. And occasionally, if they aren't getting enough water, we will see the seed, which is really what you're eating, is the pulpy part around the seed, not develop enough moisture to get sweet. And pomegranates like lots of water. They aren't really, I mean, they love the heat, and they do fine in the heat. But when I was a kid in South Scottsdale along Thomas Road, there was a ditch, and they grew pomegranates on that ditch. And so they got water pretty much all the time, 24/7, along this ditch bank. So that's the kind of water that they really enjoy. So make sure you're really watering it good, especially in the summertime. And that might help as well.
Our little three-year-old pomegranate's coming on really hardy this spring. Boy, she's full of fruit.
It helps that you've pinned the dogs away from them because they love the pomegranates.
Did you know that?
No.
We don't care if they're ripe or not.
We have three German Shorthairs. They will eat every pomegranate that blooms. I mean, it's another one of our plant prisons at our house. You can't even get to this tree. I don't know what we're going to do when it fruits up and ready to pick.
Hopefully they'll be tall enough they won't be able to get to most of them.
Oh, my goodness. Well, let's see. From there, we're going to go out to Chandler. Welcome Jim into the conversation. We appreciate you calling and listening. Jim, how can we help you, my friend?
Yes, good morning. Last fall, we planted a bottle tree, and the frost hit it really hard, but it is coming back. But now some of the branches and down at the base of the trunk is turning white. So I don't know what the problem is.
Well, it could be just normal aging. Bottle trees will get a pretty whitish gray, kind of a barky-looking scarified tissue or bark on them as they age. You know, they're really green when they're young. They have a really greenish-looking bark or skin all over them. As they age, though, they do get pretty silvery gray in appearance. So it just may be nothing more than just aging. And the frost may have had something to do with that, too. But if it's just on the skin or the bark of the main trunk and the larger limbs, it's probably just a normal aging process.
Nice. No real problems.
I don't think so.
The tree we haven't even had it in the ground for a year yet. Does that happen that quickly?
Well, not normally, no. It usually takes a little longer than that. It could be that it's sunburned. If it went a lot of the winter without a lot of foliage on it, you could have developed some sunburn on that trunk.
Well, all the leaves fell off after that heavy frost. Yeah, there wasn't any leaves left on it at all.
And you're sure it's a bottle tree?
Yes.
Because, boy, most Australian bottle trees weathered the cold just fine. So,
any remedy to a sunburned bark that's already sunburned?
Well, certainly not letting it get any worse is okay. Good. Painting it with a, you know, the Go Natural tree trunk paint.
That's that product that's clear.
No, it's not clear.
Okay.
It's kind of tan bark colored. It's the same color as citrus tree bark.
Okay.
If you had a citrus tree trunk, it's that color.
It's the option
grayish
of painting
tan.
It white like a lot of the old established citrus farms did.
Yeah, or you can buy a tree wrap, which is kind of a heavy corrugated paper, and wrap it in that. That would be a temporary solution if you didn't want to paint the trunk or have it be a color. But certainly not, and of course, ultimately getting enough leaves on the tree so it shades itself is the best solution. So, again, getting back to our tip of the week, fertilizing things like bottle trees, eucalyptus, elms, oaks, shade trees right now is a great idea.
All right. Well, let's real quick take Steve in North Phoenix. Steve, your question actually is going to apply absolutely perfectly to our show next week.
These are bigger critters, though.
Next week, we're talking critter control. We're going to be talking everything from elk and deer. Did you see where Fishing Game had to trap a black bear out of Mesa this weekend?
I did.
Took him out of a subdivision.
Yeah.
We'll be talking about all those critters, but Steve wants to talk javelina.
Hey, guys. Good morning. Great to talk to you. I'm having a heck of a time. I'm in a subdivision, and a few months ago, near the front door, I had some pots and had some plants and, you know, flowers looking really good. Heard this rustling one day and that night and looked out there, and there were five either boars or javelina out there just chomping away at it.
Yep.
Well, they went away. Last night, they took out seven of my red yuccas, 1 gallons that I put in about 3 weeks ago, just pulled them up, ate the roots, and gone. The drip system is there, everything.
That's javelina.
Well, I don't have a great solution for you other than fencing, keeping them out of the yard.
Then you've got the homeowners association to fight with there. You know, it's
you can try some different deer repellents, things that repel them. Problem with those is they're scent driven. You have to keep applying them. You know, maybe somebody will call in, but javelina are one of the biggest problems because a lot of it they're not eating either. They're just rooting around and
destroying. And yeah. We will be covering javelina next week, I promise.
covering with
you're such
cover
a bore.
Hey, we have a special guest on the line with us right now. Her name is Christy Wilhelm. She is the founder of Garden Nerd.com, and recently published a book, Gardening for Geeks, that basically has lessons of 17 years of journal entry and record keeping that she's collected. Christy, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on.
Yes, we appreciate it. Congratulations on your new book.
Thank you.
Let's start with one of the things. We get books sent to our office all the time. We can do this, do that. We want it on there. Well, we always go through them, and a lot of books don't have anything new. There's a couple new things on yours that I would like to cover. You start with 4 methods of biointense for our gardening. What is biointense to mean to someone that's never gardened before?
Sure. So biointensive methods of farming or gardening is basically putting a lot of stuff in a little bit of space and stewarding your soil in a way that supports that intensive life. So you are planting things closer together, but in order to have them thrive, you have to really condition your soil well and in order to support the growth that those plants require.
And what's your favorite of the 4 methods that you detail in the book?
That's like choosing a favorite child. But there are, you know, I sort of integrate several things. I talk about French intensive and biodynamic, and then what came along to combine those two, which is John Jevons' Grow Biointensive, which I use in my garden, as well as Mel Bartholomew's Square Foot Gardening, which is very popular among home gardeners.
We're a big fan of Mel. On your garden, just to give an idea of high produce in small areas, what's the stat on the size of your garden and how much produce that provides for your family, or what percent that provides for your family?
Sure. I have a garden. I have two gardens, actually. I belong to a community garden, and I have a home plot. And if you count the actual growing space, it's under 200 square feet in total, and I grow between 70 to 80% of our food, of our produce, from that space, and I'm a vegetarian, so that's a lot of produce.
That's a lot of produce.
That's biointense.
One thing I really like is at the end of the book, it goes into a lot of preserving methods, different types of dehydrating, canning, boiling. Most books don't do that. They just tell you how to get the food. And what a lot of people will find when they start gardening, it's addictive, and you just grow and you grow and you grow and you grow, and the more production. Well, you usually grow more than you can eat, and you do a great job of walking people through preserving at the end.
Yeah, that's important because, like you said, there's nothing worse than harvesting all of this beautiful produce, putting it in the refrigerator, and then throwing it away a month later when you've forgotten about it and haven't cooked with it or taken care of it in some way. So I wanted to make sure that people had a way of preserving it or using it. So there are some recipes in the back, too, that help you use, by different categories, like all your squash, all your greens, et cetera. And for me, storing is half the battle. So I wanted to give people the tools to do that.
And what is your what's the one thing you hope readers would take away?
Well, I definitely want to encourage people to explore these different methods of biointensive gardening, because I'm all about sustainability, and I try and encourage people to use organic methods and fertilizers in order to keep their soil microbiology alive and well, because plants may not know the difference between synthetic and organic fertilizers, but the soil definitely does. So
the book's Gardeners for Geek, the author's Christy Wilhine.